2015, we learned that just over 2,000 retained students were not funded. Where there has been no negative report about technical and vocational education and training colleges, and we hope that in all colleges, registration went well, and indeed lectures have resumed. Well, with this few notes, I will then proceed with the agenda. A word on the opening and welcome. So we now proceed to number two. I just want to check if there's still a necessity for us to do introductions, because I know we've been meeting several times now. Are there new people that we really need to know of? Maybe the department brought new people, and maybe NSFAS brought new people that we need to know. All right. Thank you very much. We will then proceed. Let's then skip item number two and proceed to three. Any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. We receive apologies from Honorable Chishonga as well as Mr. Nasser.
But also we have received an apology from the Honorable Minister. As we all know, today is a cabinet day. The Honorable Minister will be with us here, and after what he will leave the meeting. But what we appreciate is just allocating this quality time, you know, for us. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. It does give us a good hope for the year, you know, that we start right. So we start right. I have no doubt that we will achieve on our strategic objectives for this financial year. We will then proceed to item number four, briefing by the department. But before the department briefs us, I would like the Honorable Minister to give us an overview of his department. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much. Our Deputy Minister and honorable members, the DG and his team, and the members of the meeting. Chair, let me start by expressing appreciation for your understanding and once more raise this perennial problem of the fact that this committee meets on Cabinet Day all the time. And as I have said, the matter that Cabinet itself has raised, that the leader of government business will have to really try and find a way of how to deal with this problem, to work with Parliament, because the President insists rightly so that members of Cabinet must attend Cabinets, but also portfolio committees do need ministers as well, rightly so too, because we are count here. There was a suggestion that perhaps we should plan in such a way that maybe the minister comes to the portfolio committee once in 2 months or once a quarter, and then you negotiate with Parliament that you change the day of the meeting when the minister is going to present, maybe to Tuesday. But you know the difficulties in terms of scheduling. I was once a portfolio committee chairperson. I know that it's often very crazy to try and change the time allotted to committees. We also disrupt other members who go to us. Let me not take a long time, but I do want to say that, and reaffirm, by the way, that I take the portfolio committee very seriously, and I do actually benefit a lot through engagements in portfolio committee. Now, I negotiated with the President that perhaps I would be back around 11, or just after 11. So, which means, therefore, if there are any broader questions specifically directed at myself, without taking all the time of the portfolio committee, pending issues, I would be happy to answer those before I leave. But otherwise, Deputy Minister is going to be staying right through. I just thought, let me make that. Chairperson, as I've said, I think it's very time for the portfolio committee to have this focus. I'm going to be making some remarks on both items that are actually the main items for discussion today. One, which is the briefing about the 2015 enrollments, as well as NSFAS, Of course, you will be able to give his details later on. The university education presentation, for instance, will provide an overview of enrollment planning and safety for students in 2015, including scarce areas highlighted as important in the system. That presentation will also look at the status of registration at our universities and the report on the several applications here in house, which has been operating since the 2nd of January this year for this year. I'm very pleased, Chairperson, to say that cash, as we call it, is really growing. Not only in covering the post-school education sector more broadly, but also in its use by prospective students, which is very encouraging. And we've also laid a very strong foundation for the subsequent introduction of a central application system. Also, we'll be highlighting the links between cash and other areas relating to our work, especially career guidance, because we are also now using cash as another platform for career guidance services. Now, some of the key challenges being experienced in the system now relate to NSFAS and the student protests over the registration period, often about that, and they are about that at the moment. The NSFAS budget from the department for 2015-2016 amounts to 6.449 billion and comprises 4.094 billion for investor study loans and 2.205 billion for technical and vocational training quality bursaries. And I think I have a wrong figure here. 148 million, am I right? For administration. So it's 15 years, 148,000. So it's 148 million. For administration by NSFAS. Other notable allocations include the 1 billion rand from the Department of Basic Education, the Funds of Shara Bursary, 200 million from the Department of Social Development for their bursaries for social workers, and 200 million rand from universities' own funding. Also, NSFAS has been allocated 562.9 million for bursaries for scarce and critical skills for the current year from the National Skills Fund. I must say here, Jefferson and honorable members, that practically, despite the challenges that we have in NSFAS, scarce skills will give students full cost of study without any compromise. They get full cost of study because we believe that it is important that we support as much as is possible students who are in these areas. It doesn't mean the others are less important, but it is very critical in terms of our priorities. NSFAS has indicated that additional funding expected from NSF, CITAS, and other donors are estimated at 850 million rand this year, which will bring the total budget available, if you add up all these figures I've mentioned, for the 2015 academic year, increase it all to 9.5 billion rand. Now, I know that sometimes our detractors, because we have challenges, they don't emphasize the fact that government continues to put in a lot of money to assist poor students. And this is one of government's most important achievements over the last 21 years, is this matter. For example, NSFAS will be funding 205,000 first-time entering and continuing eligible students at 26 public universities and 200,000 students at 50 TVET colleges in 2015 by providing student loans and bursaries totaling, as I have said, 9.5 billion. In 2014, NSFAS provided student loans and bursaries totaling about 8.3 billion, which of course excluded the one-off allocation of 1 billion rand for the servicing of the 2013 shortfall of 700 million and 2014 shortfall of 300 million. Now, it's important to explain this because people sometimes tend to say we're slashing NSFAS. NSFAS last year was 8.2 billion. But there was a special additional amount of 1 billion rand, which was a once-off, to deal with a rather huge number of students who were continuing, who could have been excluded. So, practically then we're talking almost a jump from 8.2 to 9.5 billion this year. Now, of course, the 2015 registration period, if I can talk about that, has been characterized by student protests at TT, Walter Sisulu University, Rand University of Technology, Sfax Magatsha University, Durban University of Technology, and Wits. With the main issues, of course, being related to NSFAS, according to the information that we are collecting as a department. And the major issues here would include the following matters. The funding shortfalls for 2015 is also another perennial issue of the funding for BTEC students. Financial exclusion due to student debt. And over, also the issues are over the claims by universities and colleges. That is, students who completed loan agreement forms who had an expectation that financial aid was granted. As well as the unfunded historic debt claims by institutions. And also there are some issues around the NSFAS new student centric model that we are piloting. Sometimes the problems are about late payments of claims to institutions by NSFAS. And also expectations that university education should be free for poor students. I must say though, like the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs said yesterday in Parliament, that some political parties are opportunistically exploiting the challenges that we are facing, not in order to help, but in order to fuel problems. So they want to feed on the challenges in a manner also that is contributing to disturbances. In instances where the overwhelming majority of students want to actually to focus on their own studies. So I don't plead here at the level of the portfolio committee that all political parties need to work with us to ensure that the resources that are there are used to the full and that we, our institutions are stabilized. I'm not going to mention names. I may, because when I debate this afternoon, I may name names. I'm debating, and I'm the last person to debate. And no one will be able to come back to me once I've spoken. Yeah, and I'm in a very mean mood today, so I don't want to divert it. I asked one PFS colleague of ours who is a member of Parliament, who I shall not name, and say, how are you after you were shown the door the other day? He says to me, no, he had learned to deal with those situations from his past experience and it was with police that you must never make the mistake of stiffening your body. You must just relax. Once you stiffen your body, it's taken as a threat, you will get something more with you to that. But I won't mention who that is. I want to make this point that government is committed to reaching our goal to assist every deserving we are also in earnest now investigating the possibility also of assisting those who fall through the cracks, who do not qualify for NSFAS, but at the same time, they are unable to be assisted either by banks or other institutions. And we affect a lot of workers and professionals who are not rich, but university. I met someone yesterday who was telling me that he has got 3 kids in university, at university. And that's very stiff. So we are also investigating this as part of expanding access to education for those South Africans who may not be able to be afforded this. But to fully fund all qualifying NSFAS students and meet the goals of the NDP, an amount of 36 billion rand for university and 15 billion rand for TVET students is required over the MTF period. So it's not a small amount of money, despite the fact that we're putting a lot of money as government. We've also been receiving several allegations of corruption and fraud involving recipients of financial aid through NSFAS. Given the limited financial resources deficit and the demand for financial aid from poor and needy students, corruption and abuse of NSFAS resources not only robs financially needy students of the opportunity to further their studies, but also threatens the stability of the entire higher education training sector. Following these allegations of abuse and corruption, I have ordered a full forensic investigation into financial aid provided through NSFAS to determine the levels of corruption, maladministration, and collusion in the financial aid process. Terms of reference, I'm pleased to say, have been finalized for this investigation, and the advert has been published for tender vision. Yeah, people who can assist us with this. The department will hold a compulsory briefing session for all bidders on the 19th of February. That's when? Tomorrow. Yes. And the shortlisted service providers may call to make a presentation to the evaluation committee before a final selection is made. So we're serious about this matter. The other details you will be given, I don't want to take the, but allow me to then just also just make some few additional remarks, Chair, on multi-level colleges. Just broad indications. In terms of the indicative budget for TVET colleges, government is to invest no less than 8 billion rands in TVET colleges for the 2015 academic year. We're very pleased about this. This comes through, of course, government subsidies for the system as well as NSFAS bursaries. Remember, by the way, in TVET colleges, it's not loans, it's bursaries that they get. Now, on registration, as part of preparing for the 2015 registration, the department ran workshops to prepare colleges and regional office staff to manage registration at the start of the academic year. Subsequent to this process as provided for in the law, all civil colleges submitted council-approved strategy and annual performance plans for approval and implementation in 2015 and beyond. This is a very important development. Because we've actually only been doing this with universities. Now we are doing it with the colleges. We have proper strategic plans, including annual performance plans and enrollment plans. I approve all 2015 TVET college strategic and operations plans at the end of 2014. Parallel to this, the Director General approves the 2015 TVET college academic calendar. By September 2014, most colleges had already opened for pre-enrollment and bursary applications. What did the president say? Is that Cooper? When registration started, The department has provided support and guided Tibet colleges by standardizing registration processes. To us, this is very important because before it's like individual colleges are doing things differently, their own way, in a manner that has caused lots of problems in the past. During January 2015, 201 college campuses were supported and monitored by regional officials. This also is something that we are proud of having achieved. Remember, we've got 264 campuses, so we covered quite a lot, 201. Of course, we wish that we could have covered all, but some of our colleges, of course, are doing very well. So we will be giving them indication of how this monitoring was conducted when the department gives you a more detailed, what are the issues that we're looking at. Now, we have already been capturing the 2015 first-term student enrollment data received from colleges on the 19th of January this year. The date for the next submission of the enrollment data is 20th of February, 2015, day after tomorrow. This data will provide provisional enrollment figures for the first quarter, subject to verification by the department for purposes of subsidy allocation. The emerging trend in enrollment data shows an increase in students and volume for what we call Report 191/NCERT, the end programs, as compared to the National Certificate Vocational Excellence. We are analyzing the underlying factors for the preference of N programs over the NCV because we think that should give us some insights as to another way of giving us further insight on what is particularly attracting students to the N programs, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's bad. At college level, new students have received counseling for career choices and placement tests are conducted to advise students on career choices and possible academic support. As per the college calendar, we are pleased to say classes commenced on the 19th of January 2015. Now, let me end by just highlighting some problem areas. Chair, you have said you're not aware of where problems are. I would just like to share with the committee as I conclude where we have problems so that you are aware, even in your own oversight, you may be able to into this. Strike at Waterbury, Lipala, Buffalo City and East Cape Midlands colleges have had negative effects on enrollment in these colleges. That's where we are having problems at the moment. Or have had problems. At Waterbury Tibet College, students were locked out of the classes and hostels by the manager of the former Kubane College of Education, employed by the Limpopo Department of Education. This impasse has been resolved between the college and the Limpopo Department of Education, and the students have been allowed to continue with classes whilst we are addressing this matter. At Buffalo City Tibet College, students went on strike because of inadequate allowances for transport and accommodation. And nevertheless, this has stabilized through management and council intervention. The Parallel Tibet College lecturers went on strike demanding more pay for afternoon sessions for part-time students. Management and council are currently handling this issue. This is a matter that Chair and DG will also have to continuously engage the trade union. Because truly speaking, sometimes there's a thin dividing line. Additional time and time that we expect someone who is a lecturer to be doing work. But we don't want to impose anything. It's something that we have to engage trade unions around. At East Cape Midlands Tibet College, now members engaged in an unprotected strike, which after truly the labor processes has unfortunately resulted in the dismissal of 69 staff members. Teaching and learning at this college is adversely affected at the High Street campus in Mutiny and Heath Park in Port Elizabeth. The closing days for the first term enrollments is 20th of February, as I say. Chairperson Agumpa was a bit disciplined in terms of just limiting my remarks to this, and I have said I'm happy to take a few questions, comments, and thereafter I will be until just around 11. Thank you very much, Chair.
Minister, and we, on behalf of the committee, we welcome the overview by the Honourable Minister. And since the Minister will be leaving us within a short space of time, I really want us to zoom on to reflection on the report. I will now open the meeting for reflection on the Minister's overview. I see Ms. Killian, Professor Pozzoli, and Mr. Masa. Mr. Ketane, in that order.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Honourable Minister. Just a quick question. You have announced in the media, and you have raised a concern about the cost of tertiary education. And you have announced that you will, in fact, appoint a commission or a commission of inquiry to look at the matter. What progress has so far been made? How do you see the process unfold? Secondly, which links to that issue is the whole issue of NSFAS funding, the problem that so many black students rely absolutely on NSFAS funding, and some teachers that were experienced in late payment to institutions of the money that is due to these students. How would you and the department address this very serious matter? Because is it through lack of capacity in NSFAS? Is it systems that are not talking to each other? What is at the root of that? And how do you see that? Because clearly that cannot be tolerated. If there is any inefficiencies in the system, you have to take steps to root that out. If you will also look at that matter.
Thank you, Ms. Killian. Over to you, Professor Pozzoli.
Very glad to hear that the engaging with the portfolio committee benefits you a lot. Although that's not the point of the portfolio committee. The point of the portfolio committee is for you to answer to us, not for you to benefit. Anyway, it's really lovely that you do also benefit. The second point is the special 1 billion additional amount that you got last year, and I must say, as a member of one of the parties that has brought the attention to the lack of funding or the shortage of funding in NSFAS, I've always emphasized the amazing achievements of NSFAS and the extraordinary growth in NSFAS over the last year. Nevertheless, putting in that extra 1 billion last year, and ironically, could have been a mistake, because it's now perceived as being a drop in NSFAS funding. When the 1 billion no longer exists, although of course we all know this was simply for 1 year. But it does seem to me worth thinking about finding another billion for this year as emergency funding. And that is something that I really would ask you to consider. If another billion can be found as a stopgap measure simply to enable us to soften these protests that are occurring at the moment. The other point that I want to raise is that I do think we need to have a breakdown and analysis of the causes of student debt. We often hear about how student indebtedness is causing riots. Students accumulate enormous debts and then don't get into that type of money or even get admitted to the university because of those debts. Can we ask the department to provide us with a breakdown of the kinds of things that cause that debt? It can't be monocausal, and it can't simply be poverty among the students. So it would be really useful to try and understand that, and maybe for this to work out a series of methods to which then it can be addressed. And my last point is, you know, universities are put in a bind as a result of the fact there isn't enough money in this space. At the same time, as in absolute terms, their in relative terms, their subsidies are not increasing substantially, and yet their targets that are given to them by the department are fairly stringent, and they have to admit a certain number of students, or they won't get the subsidy that they deserve. So what you're doing, in a way, is putting universities in a position where they have to admit X number of students, and they know well in advance that only Y number of students will be funded, which means that the universities are bound to experience projects. My question to you is, will you allow universities to relax the admissions target in order to cope with this? Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Borodi and Ms. Tambata. Honourable members.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much, Minister, for the presentation. I just want to share with you two questions. One is the relationship between the price of our education and the inability of our government to provide guidance on the price of education. For instance, we visited the University of Mpumalanga. They are currently sitting on 64,000 as a price. And when we ask them to break it down, they can't even break it down. Now, the problem there is that there seems to be a growing tendency to just price things without providing value for money, without also thinking extraordinary on the conditions of each geopolitical area. Now, if we accept that in South Africa the areas or the cities are not necessarily the same equivalent in terms of land price, property price, what will make the University of Mpumalanga just opening its doors to pick up that price? That's one. Two, there is a growing relationship between fraud in the NSFAS and the certain category of parents, which you alluded to, who really cannot afford, but the bracket of their pay gets rejected by NSFAS, and so go down the memory lane of doing all sorts of things. What also we have realized is that we are dealing with a growing number of black indebtedness. And this level of indebtedness has a lot to do with the number of students who will be able to be paid by their parents. Now, I'm sure your government has something. You spoke highly about the offer to extend free education to the poor only, which you have said, I can't remember what you said. Now, these numbers are growing fast, and we're not able to catch up. Is it not maybe time to really bracket the black poor and Africans in particular for free education? Because we seem to be running an open tab, and like open tab, is the one that's addressing me. Because this money is not enough. And secondly, this money has been not growing for a while. If you remember the budget for NSFAS between 1998 and 2002, it stagnated. The only drastic peak of magnitude is when you came in. So, there is a difference between one minister to the other in terms of focus. And these are the consequences that they have played that in the manner in which financing our education will be affected. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Now, cross over to Honourable Member Kitan.
and Minister, the thing that for a very long time I think we grew up with this thing that Africa is poor, it can't afford. I think our generations at this point in time we are kind of getting tired of it. Now the strategy of changing this thing of Africa reaching to South Africa, I mean, if on welfare we're spending 130 billion, that's on grants, and on education we're spending 50 billion, how can we make sure that we're not the welfare and philanthropic society, but a productive, people can be productive and people can afford? Because this thing of not affording children has run for rather too long. We in leadership, if we put our heads together, what is the real strategy? How can we make sure that we empower, we train our people that they can afford? Because the grants are there because mothers, these young ladies of 25 are unemployed, they can't afford to feed their own babies. So ultimately, how do we make sure that the citizens of Africa, not just our South Africa, can afford, can be productive, and they can compete with anybody internationally? And we're not just welfareist and philanthropy, expecting handouts from first world countries.
Honorable Minister, I will now request you to respond to the children flowing from your overview.
Thank you very much. Thanks to honorable members. Honorable Killian, maybe let's just give a quick background on what we have done around the issue. Finding posts of quiet nations. I appointed a ministerial task team. It wasn't a commission. It was led by the now Deputy President, Cyril Ramaphosa. He wasn't Deputy President then. Which has completed its work on reviewing the funding formula for universities. Just to look at the fact that we had not looked at the funding formula for a long time, the landscape has changed quite significantly in terms of our universities. The number has grown quite a lot, and we also gone through a process of measures and all this. The DG will possibly give you some details as to exactly where we are with that, because we are currently doing modeling of if we were to implement this formula, how would things look like. And we are completing that by March next year, am I right? Because we are quite keen that we should then implement. We will, of course, share that in the portfolio committee at an appropriate time once we are ready to say, here is the project that we think, and then be able to subject it to discussion. Of course, cabinet will in the end have to take the final decision. But also, in December last year, I had a meeting with the Vice Chancellor, HISA, Higher Education South Africa. And one of the things we agreed to was that we need to have a comprehensive look. This would partly relate to what Honorable Mata was saying. What are the cost drivers in higher education? And let's just grapple with that. Which then would give us an indication in a number of areas, including your question, what makes University of Mpumalanga to charge 64,000 beds per student when it's a university? Maybe we'll be able, by the way, to get some detailed responses to that, but look at, for example, despite the fact that we've put in a lot of money, which has sort of improved the situation a little bit, mainly through NSFAS and infrastructure funding, by the way, which have been sort of our flagship interventions, specialized interventions. I'm not saying that there aren't others. But still, we stand at 1.4 of GDP spent on higher education, which is even below the African continental average. And we count it, by the way, not just money given by government, but money also from other sources, the private sector and so on, the money that we are spending on higher education. The junta of the ruling party, the ANC, took a decision, for instance, that we need to look at least working towards reaching the continental average. At the very least. So that we are able to address this matter. There are a number of things, I don't want to get into details, Chairperson. There are a number of things that we have to look at when we are looking at the cost drivers. For instance, I've learned now that there is something called higher education inflation, which is higher than, you know, normal country average inflation, determined by a whole range of extraneous factors, like the rand-dollar exchanges. We import books, we import equipment for our laboratories, and a whole range of other things. Some people, of course, have been wondering why we still have VAT on books. All those things we actually have to look into when we are looking at the cost drivers. So one thing we want to do, we are not only going to engage ESA, we are also going to engage all stakeholders, students, workers, academics, and other interested parties. Because you are right, we will also have to look at the issue of fees. That might sound as they do concede. Professor Puzuri, I thought you were going to say that. But of course, they do look at NSFAS. You know, it pounds them on NSFAS to try and deal with their own choices that they increase NSFAS. So we end up, what's the right English word? Usuveluka, what is that you it is about the child. So, you want? Yeah, or chasing what? The mirage, yes, that is the literal translation of my book. You're chasing a mirage, you'll never catch a mirage. Let's say it's a soul. Now, they payment of NSFAS, we would not have to that. Since they are here, what I would like to say is that we do insist on NSFAS that they pay on time. But it's not often, it's not only that NSFAS not pay on time. Sometimes institutions themselves do not submit their claims on time and do not provide information timely. So we need to look at the entire system, but NSFAS will be able to explain this. Sometimes that's poor management, there's lack of communicating information. For instance, NSFAS will talk about our intention is that the student that applies for NSFAS must know within 48 hours. Am I right about that? But some colleges, for instance, will see for a week, for 2 weeks, and students start going on strike because they've not been told whether they qualify for NSFAS or not using the means test. But we do think in any case that NSFAS must increase its own resources, especially human resources and other things, in order to be able to address the main challenges that it has. It's grown big, 9.5 billion in 1 year. So we are working with NSFAS insofar as this is concerned. Professor Pozori, I hear your points, but I don't want a situation where we're always looking for money. We always, as a department, as government, all the time. But I don't want a not sure when I say this, then people start having expectations that we'll find more money. But we're always looking for money, including your call, by the way, which is important to say, also the private sector must come into the party. We want to be more systematic about this now. I'm very glad, by the way, that one big support of this is the deputy president, who has said he's willing to be part of working with us to reach out to the private sector so that we are able to complement funds. But not only then when we find funds and then the DA says, nah, we are the ones who ask for these funds. Not politicize that. If we find some money, because we are always looking for money. But it does not mean that we've got money at the moment. We don't want to create false expectations. I think the issue of student debt, you are raising an important point, but can we leave that to the detailed presentation?
Or for the DG to perhaps be able to answer it in some state? What shape does the student debt take?
I don't know what you meant by saying that shouldn't we allow the universities to relax admissions. Are you suggesting that maybe we shouldn't push them this hard?
Well, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one because there's huge demand for space. It does not mean that as a department we're not aware that we mustn't push the system such as it collapses. But at the same time, it's very difficult to say just relax when we've got such issues. The challenge is diversification in the post-school system. That's the direction we are taking. Because at the moment, it's one route, university route. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood. Sometimes we push to such an extent that we might be having in the system students who could have benefited better if they had said that someone else. And still be able to rejoin and actually do university. You know, my own theory is that, for instance, students who work for vocational orientation, starting at a TVET college would perhaps prepare them better to become engineers if they go to university, and improve even the throughput rate of the pathway. Not a delay with diversion. It's having a choice in the system. That's why if there is one main thing in our white paper, is expand and diversify the post-school education and training sector. So that there is no one part of the system that is carrying the scenes for the absence of other types of institutions. In the system. I know that Honorable Mbatha also, by implication, he wants to say, why are we not controlling fees? You see, when we do this exercise of looking at the cost drivers of higher education, we are going to be looking into this. Because sometimes I am concerned, why would one university increase fees by 6% and the other one by 12%? Why are some universities so expensive compared to others? We will also have to look into all this. I don't want to have any presumptions at the moment, but we will have to look into all this. But that also cannot be looked outside of the amount of money that the country and government is putting into higher education. Because also we don't want students to be responsible for funding the system. Yes, those who can afford must pay. Statements that this is those who can't afford. But we can't then be saying the system largely is going to be funded through student fee. We have to look holistically at this matter. You know, sometimes I have a problem. I can't read my own handwriting. My hieroglyphics. The indebtedness is also going to be addressed when I hope the DG is looking at some of the details of student debt. The last issue, the relationship between fraud and what we call the middle.
relationship, but it can't be a justification. I'm not saying you are justified. It can't be a justification, therefore, to compromise the poorest of the poor. That is why we are not only looking into the issue of fraud. I know that's why we are at the same time looking into what you call misinformation. They are doing both things this year. We also have got a fairly good idea, by the way, of the money that we need and the size of the numbers of poor, very poor students. Remember, as I did in exercise, one of the first things that I did as a minister was to appoint a ministerial task team which looked into NSFAS and the needs for funding and so on. So we've got a fairly good idea of what we're talking about. Honorable Whip, I really agree with you. We can't become a welfare state. We want to be a developmental state, not a welfare state. In any case, we can't afford to be a welfare state. Only your Sweden, your Norway, you know, and so on can really truly be welfare states. We don't need those kinds of resources and small numbers of highly educated populations. Our task is, of course, broadly to increase jobs and other opportunities for sustainable livelihoods. Now, if I may perhaps rehearse what I'm saying this afternoon in this debate, there are a few things in the state, the President's State of the Nation address that have become very crucial in order also that we avoid this route of trying to be informed. Because we can only be informed to the state because we don't have resources to do that. In the issue of land and the set aside for SMEs and cooperatives, I think that's the story. People say 30% of so much must go to cause and SMEs. That really we hope will cause a revolution and really increase jobs as well as sustainable opportunities for sustainable livelihoods. Well, that's government's commitment to try and create conditions that our people are able to look after themselves and not be looked after by a kind of an enemy state, but the state to be able to play a role. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've answered everything.
Well, honourable member,
maybe Minister the dimensions of the student debt we address when we are making the presentation. But with regard to the fund, the review of the fund formula for the workshop currently took place at the time. The technical task team has been established with a view of allocating the recommendations that I made from the ministerial committee. Which was undertaking the practice in this case. And just presented its analysis to the reference group. And now, after the discussions there, they are actually undertaking a model which the final report will be presented to us by March 2015. So that work is receiving our adequate attention at the present moment. And that's what the minister is saying, we will share the outcomes of that exercise with the everybody, in particular the portfolio committee. Thanks.
Okay, I hope that in the media ahead, when the ESF and the GA were commenting very positively about our achievements through NESMA, I hope that point has been taken. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, do you have follow-up questions? You... Okay. Honourable member Kulu?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Minister, for the overview. It really shows that work has been done. In your presentation, you reported that classes and tutors began on the 19th of January. However, during an oversight to Swami North College, we we hope that the classes have not yet started owing to the lack of lecturers and textbooks. The college, I think, is close to the departmental offices, and I think one would hope that in terms of monitoring, that is where the department will focus more. I would like to know who is responsible for ensuring that books are delivered on time and that the lecturers, that there are lecturers in colleges. We know that we have just taken these to the colleges, but in terms of monitoring classes, whether everything, the systems are on pace, that is my concern. I just want to know who is doing that part. Thank you.
Well, coming from my side, Honourable Minister, in your presentation you alluded to the fact that you have now completed your terms of reference for the forensic investigation. Now, as this committee, we would like you to share with us that information. And my next question would then be, does the department have an intervention strategy to address the challenges at East Cape Midlands to the college? Then the last one, last year the Honourable Minister, when addressing us, alluded to money to the tune of 2 billion that you impounded from the CITAS savings. We would like the Honourable Minister to share with us on how is that money used presently, or can it be used for addressing the debt that are there presently? You know, that what students cannot address. Just a question, Honourable Minister. Thank you. Over to the Honourable Minister.
Thanks, sir. By the way, I forgot to respond to Honorable Posoldes. What I mean by saying benefit does not mean that I'm saying I'm not accounting, but that for me it's not just needed to account. Over and above that, the interactions are very important and enriching for the portfolio committee. That's what I meant. It wasn't because I'm saying that I don't account to the committee. But it's not simply about that. It must be more than that. Honorable Kuno, we may get some more details, perhaps DG, but the responsibility for monitoring of colleges now is with us, the Department of Education and Training. We still do have some capacity challenges, we must be quite honest. As a relatively new department, and also faced with the challenges, which I hope there is some stage we have dedicated time to talk about the migration process, because it's been longer than we anticipated, the movement of staff. I think I might have said this in the portfolio committee that, in fact, it's going to be important for Parliament as a whole to monitor instances where functions are transferred, new departments are created, or some department are next, because sometimes it's easier for the president to do a proclamation. But to actually then get that being done takes long. Look, in our case, we are only really having staff transfers in April 2015 for a proclamation of November 2009. We hope that this transfer of staff, not that some of the staff in the provinces have not been helping and assisting and so on, but the actual transfer then has enabled us to really be able to say, we now have this staff which we are going to use this way, because we are going to need provincially based staff in order to be closer to the colleges, amongst other things, because it's not just colleges only. But we are responsible for that. I was worried, Honorable Mkunu, when you talk about that college to the department, because we can't work with any approach of any college being disturbed. But that one in particular, we also use their funding. course, we don't have enough planning. They've got more planning space than they need. But he kind of put himself in there because he should have the country of the department as a whole. It's right next door to school at Honorable Trade. I don't know whether they've seen it. But maybe the teacher would like to add in so far as the issue of monitoring is concerned. Chart of reference for the forensic investigation. DG, I can leave that to you. They are open, they are not. We can share that information. Yeah, it's not anything. We pay a lot of attention. The DG may be able to give even additional information here on intake meetings because we worry about developments in that college. It's also not nice to terminate workers or staff. But we've been faced with quite enormous challenges there. And we are prioritizing the issue of bringing stability to this college. But the DG has been leading from the front on this one. He can also tell you more, Chair, about the savings from the CIDAS. I must say that we're having a bit of a cat and mouse on this with some of the sitters, let me put it that way. Yeah, because they have some resistance to part with this other money. Some of it we are told all of a sudden it's committed. You know, or it's now committed and so on. But we are doing everything to try and get as much of that money as possible. What we are working with, we don't just want to impound that money and then use it in a kind of business as usual. One of the things for me that is important is that part of what unspent money should do is to build the capacity of the system. Let me give you one example quickly. Most of the sitters overwhelmingly they battle to produce sector skilled players. For this sector of economy in which we are operating, what are the skills needs, what are the demands, what are the shortages, how is the situation likely to be in 10, 15 years' time. That's what sitters are supposed to be doing. All sitters, by the way, do not have, on the whole, labor market experts, because that's what you need. You know, so part of the money we must use to capacitate the system. And some of the suggestions that have been made, for instance, by the Human Resources Development Council and the ministerial task team that I appointed a few years ago to look into the CETA system, is that maybe we need to centralize research on the labor market rather than just giving it. We have 21 research initiatives. I'm sure Professor Mazuru understands that maybe we need central capacity for research, which includes sector skills planning. The advantage of that also is that you can be able to compare one sector to the next. And improve, by the way, if many aspects about training. Because sometimes you find certain sectors with different accreditations for electricians. But an electrician is an electrician, irrespective of the sector of the economy that the electrician is operating. I'm just making an example. But the DG can be able to give some more details. But also some of this money must be able to support, for instance, say, some skills in particular ways, or to strengthen or build capacity that we do not have in the system, even if it may be universities or TVET colleges. For instance, I'm not aware if any of our TVET colleges, but Metro, is training sound engineers. I think it's private colleges that have got that. We need to build that. That's making an example, an idea that comes to mind. We need to have that in the public sector. And many other fields that are not there can't train in our public. So we need to be looking at all that and then saying, well, given what we have or what we may have, this is what we actually like to do. But I must say that the CIDAS already are contributing quite a lot towards this, but how much? It's over 500 million. This has increased. That is how we have pushed the citizen. It has not been this amount of money before. And also to be spent systematically. But it's not just throwing money at the problem. We are also saying the citizen should prioritize people who are studying in their own areas, if you know what I mean. If it's a media and information communications and technology center, we will expect that a large proportion of their faculty will support students in there. Your insurance center, your financial center must support accountants, must support actuaries, and so on. So, but DG may be able to give you a bit more on that, Jefferson. Thank you very much.
Members, it does look like we have exhausted all the questions to, at, in response to the minister's overview. Yes. Well, Honourable Minister, if you still have got time, you can still stay with us, but we now proceed with the agenda. In terms of our agenda, we are now on briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training on enrollment and registration 2015 in higher education institutions and technical and vocational education and training colleges. Maybe we was waiting for the minister to tell us who will do the presentation. If one can just recap on whether it appears in areas of focus coming from our interaction with the minister. Is looking at the cost drivers at institutions of higher education and also finding a way of controlling the university fees so that indeed there's no blockage in terms of access to these institutions of higher learning, and also timeliness. I think this one came up very, very strong. Timeliness payment by the department to NSFAS and timeliness payment by NSFAS to the institution. That came up very, very strong. And also debt management. We're still going to get more information on how do we see ourselves crossing this head. We trust the DG will assist us on this one. So it does look like it's becoming a problem, and instead of this problem being reduced, the Honourable Minister found that it is growing every year. But that's key, that we must find if we need to meet this one in the fund. Find a solution, because it becomes a stumbling block to our children accessing education. Alright, but also the fact that the department is going to monitor, intensify the monitoring, the overseers, so that we achieve on the strategic objective, that of skills development, and not end the year with a saving. Because that saving, one of the ministers says, it means the allocated money they don't need. That's the interpretation of the saving. What money that you do not need. So, thank you very much. I'm sure the DG is ready now. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I understand the screen is not working.
Yes, but I know that one of us got the presentation for the paper. I'm sure we will then use our presentation. I don't know who else needs a presentation so that we are ready. Okay, I'm told that additional copies there. If you went here.
Yeah. They are finished.
Okay, but let me see how many people need this presentation. How many more? So everybody has. All right. Okay. So, DG, you can let people will be able to use their. Yeah. Thank you so much. We then hand over to the.
No, thank you very much. Can we proceed, is that?
Yeah, I'm picking up some, things that I was saying. We actually need to speak with the government. I've got to fix what is wrong here. because it's really not acceptable that our systems are not touched. Okay, but due to time constraints, I think we will proceed using the conversation that was circulated. We are in your hands, DG.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. We start with the higher education that asked Dr. Diana Pala to kick start that off, and then Stephen Kennedy. So I'm not sure whether we do all of them simultaneously or we then engage on the discussions or what. I tried simultaneously with that thing.
What would be the best interest of the honorable members? Do both presentations? And then after engage in a discussion for one at a time.
We have two presentations and we have a mid-sized presentation. I'm just wondering how we're going to allocate our time, especially given that the minister did mention a lot of facts that are actually in this presentation already, this first presentation. So can I just ask that we allocate time for the various sections of what we have to get through.
So, remember the earlier proposal was, are we going to do all the presentations at once and then engage in a discussion, or do one presentation at a time and then discuss? I'm trying to check whether you encounter that proposal or...
My proposal would be we include the NIPS
factor. All the presentations and then we work on a discussion. Alright. Thank you very much. Shall we then have all the speakers presented and then we will then discuss. Shall we allocate time so that we are able to make it for the session after the joint meeting? The time now is 11 o'clock and obviously we need more time for engagement. So can we allocate this a proposal? Or members want to propose a journey both myself and I can make a proposal. 15 minutes per presentation. Is it too little?
I was thinking if I look at the two presentations from the department, the one is extensively longer than the other one. I think we should allocate a global time to the department, so maybe say 55 minutes, so they can cover that, and then we start to think of because the presentations are, you know, quite long.
So your proposal...
We will do in 30 minutes.
For both?
Yeah, for both.
Okay. 10 minutes for both. And then next part? 15. So 45 minutes. Yeah? Thereafter we'll end. Alright? So you'll be our time. Okay, I'm not really there.
Thank you very much. We kickstart everything, money in time. It's just been used to manage network problems. Can you start?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think quite a lot of the information in our presentation has already been covered by the Minister, so we won't go to all those in detail. But the presentation begins with just a little bit about university enrollment planning and the numbers that we expect in the system this year. And then we look at the issue of the status of a registration. We also want to report on the cash system because I think there's interesting data that comes out of that. There are some issues in here around the NIPS that are challenges, but I think the Minister covered those quite comprehensively, and the facts will do its own presentation. So we won't spend much time on that. And then some of the ways in which we're looking at going forward. Perhaps just to start off around enrollment planning process, and I think it's an important question that was asked earlier after the Minister's presentation with respect to the numbers that are in enrollment plan. And I'd like to stress that the way in which the department does enrollment planning is through negotiation with universities. We meet one-on-one with every single university and with their academic planners, and we work out what is going to be reasonable within the time fiscus. So when you look at the enrollment
Hongkong and that has been approved by the minister last year, which is the one for the next 6 years, that was working on what's in the current baseline and the expected increases in the baseline. So all our universities, we hope, will be sticking fairly close to those figures, although we do know that there are issues that do come up from time to time. The slides that are given there do give the actual audited figures in enrollment for 2012 and 2013, and then give projected targets for 2014 and 2015. And also they looked at the figures for engineering, life and physical sciences, animal and human health, and teacher education, and skills areas that have been highlighted. You will notice that the projected targets for 2014 for total first-time entry students is just under 200,000, it's 195,745,000 students, and then we've given the projected targets in each of the skills sort of areas too. In terms of the actual total enrollment, the total enrollment for the system, and that including all the continuing students, the projected target for 2014 is just over 1 million, and for 2015 is 1,020,000 odd students. So we are expecting a growth in enrollment, but the growth is fairly modest. In terms of the registration period, as you will be aware that we haven't finished registrations in the system, so we're not able to give formal figures in terms of how many students have been registered. We will only get those preliminary figures later on in the year. But there are many different types of registrations that are ongoing within the system. In terms of the central application clearing house, you'll be aware that we started operating this on the 2nd of January 2015, and it's going continuing through the whole of February. We'll be able to give the final audited figures at the end of February. But I think what's important is that this year the CAC is operating through mostly the quality service line that provides access to a number of different support services. First, the application support, which is the CAC itself. And through application support, students are able to register their interest, their area of interest, and we are able to look at their matriculants and see if we can match them with places in the system. They are also able to access the financial aid support through the Midland Centre. They can access career support through the Career Development Centre. So when you phone in, you put on for career supporters. And I think that's a very important aspect of it, because we find that many of the students looking for spaces don't really know what it is that they want to do, or understand whether or not the results they've received in their national senior certificates is sufficient to get them into those areas that they want to do. It also links to the Armament Support Centre, so that they're able to go through that process in order to apply for officership. And then we've got the General Postal Education and Training Support Centre, which is a DHET helpline. So all of those are connected to the single toll-free number this year. And that's been an important improvement on the system. We're in a third of operation this year, and we're seeing the operation improving every year. We're hoping this year the placement ratio will be even greater, but you'll see the first year we operated, the placement ratio was 5% of the individuals who call in, not places at university. Last year, the placement ratio was 21%, which is quite a lot higher, and we do expect this year, because operations are running more smoothly, for that to increase. We will be able to really get a full understanding of the placement ratio after the second semester intake from that, but we are expecting it to grow. It expanded specifically this year from a service that was only looking at university placements to a much broader physical education training service. We've been, to date, by the 6th of February, this was the latest data we had here, the CAC Centre had handled 17,122 calls, and that's compared to 10,908 the previous year. So it has increased in volume as people get to know it. When we looked at the actual student results. We've noticed that it ranges from 24% average to those who achieve the 93% average. So there are a lot of students in that range that need to be going to different areas within the postal education and training system. We have provided some graphs for you to look at in terms of comparisons. We can see there in terms of the catch volumes, the call van volumes in 2014 as compared to 2015. Hopefully you've got coverage on our graph, so you'll be able to see the difference. And you can see that it's been significantly higher. In terms of the channel utilization, the majority of students are using the toll-free telephone number, but there are also significant numbers using the website and SMS system. So all three systems are being utilized. In terms of the profile of students who are coming in, you can see the majority of the students who are phoning the catch are ones who have been rebated by an institution. In other words, they did apply the previous year. And there has been received the regret from the institution, and there are others who obviously haven't applied and have come in as well to this, but it's significantly less, about a third of them are people who haven't applied. In terms of the endorsement distribution, the majority of students coming in do have a bachelor's degree endorsement, so over 60%, about 64% of them, and you can see that about 39% of them have diploma endorsement. So the majority of those using the CAT system are still prospective university students. In terms of their grade 12 final examination results, the majority are lying between having a 60% to 70% result, and there are a small number, about 7%, who've actually got an over 70% average. And what we are trying to do within the system is to pick up students who really need to be in universities and ought to be in universities and working with our universities to assist them, and then also looking at how we can find placements for other students within those within that profile. There's quite a big distribution in terms of what students are looking for. The very surprising is that about 25% of the students, 52% of the students, are actually interested in teaching, in education. So that's quite a large number of these students. The profile across the system is interesting too. We see that the majority of students are from Western Cape. We presume that because of the rest, many of the students applying for Western Cape institutions and not getting in. And then the second highest is Gauteng, going down to the Northern Cape, which is the lowest. In terms of the CAT user profile, we also looked at that in terms of the different population groups, and we see that the majority, which is not surprising, about 79%, are black. We feel that the CAT going forward has to remain responsive to the needs of applicants and institutions. And the most important success indicator in the end will be the placement of these students. And we do need that as the placement ratio increases, so the attractiveness of utilizing this as an alternative for getting access into higher education will improve. I'm not going to talk much about the NISTAD processes. I think NISTAD can talk to those, and the Minister will identify some of the critical challenges. So I'm going to skip over this. I suppose just to indicate that, as the Minister has highlighted, NISTAD is our flagship project in terms of providing access to higher education. Now, I think one of the things that we didn't stress in these slides, it does need to be stressed, is that in terms of our contact institutions, about 30% of our students are being funded through NISTAD. And that is quite significant. And even in some of those institutions where there have been challenges, I mean, we take, for example, the CUP challenge. At CUP, 20,000 students are being supported by NISTAD. In other words, around about 40% of their students are being supported by NISTAD, which is very high. So while we have challenges, we also have to acknowledge that there's a large support in the system for NISTAD. In terms of student unrest, this was also mentioned, the portfolio committee is aware of those institutions where there is some unrest going on. Mostly this year, though, I think And we are not seeing the kind of iron protests that we saw previously. And that may be due to some of the active work that was done towards the end of last year, both at the level of the minister meeting with our vice chancellors and the institution, but also in terms of the work that was done through the dialogue that we had, including NISAT, AHISA, the South African Students' Union, and the University Chairs of Council Forum. And we also ran a number of student leadership workshops where we discussed the challenges in the system and we looked at ways in which we could try and mitigate against some of the issues. Obviously, we hope that we will be able to manage the situation over the next while and that we don't have violence taking, but there have been some challenges and these have been mentioned, and we'll be working closely with our institutions to deal with problems as they arise. In terms of the preparations for 2015, all institutions are looking at this issue of outstanding fees and student debt and financial exclusion. Some of the institutions have informed us that they are making arrangements for students to pay back those amounts to mitigate against financial exclusion. But we will only have the full detail of exactly what has been put into the system going forward. We do have the challenge that many students are demanding that they be admitted into the institutions, and we're going to have to work with that as we go forward and find ways of dealing with it. The issue of student accommodation remains a challenge. We are very well aware of it, and together we are working at how we can improve on it. As we go forward into the future, though, we do believe that there are a number of important interventions that we need to stress and put in place. The first one links to our work with teaching development in universities and the use of the teacher development grant. And one area that I think is improving and will contribute to a more stable system is the number of first year experience initiatives that are being implemented across the system to assist young people coming into universities, particularly those from rural and disadvantaged areas. There have been a number of writing centres being established through the use of these grants, and that will also help with language development and support to ensure that we have better throughput and retention in the system. We also will be going forward implementing the Sign Our campaign to get that message out to people early that they need to apply for higher education in the public school education and training system generally, and that we're hoping in time we will be able to say that no late applications will be accepted, that we get that ethos in the system amongst young people that they need to apply the year before. We saw that the basic education, you can recall many years ago when parents used to bring students on the first day of school. Now we've managed to get to the point where students do apply better. And the issue of the career development services, we think that's a very important aspect that's been put into the system. It is now operating effectively from the department, and there we will be linking it directly to the Apply Now campaign. So the message is students need to be thinking about the future and applying on time and getting the right kind of advice so that they know what they are able to apply for. In 2016, CASH will focus on assisting students who have applied but have not been accepted and looking at how we can give them advice and redirect them. We are currently in the process of developing the enterprise architecture for the federal application system more generally, and we'll be developing that during 2015. And the plan is that the whole system should be developed and being implemented by 2018. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Tata. Over to you, sir.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Tata, for the presentation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and greetings to honourable members. The appendix slide is on slide 3, which captures the preparations we are now with to prepare the colleges for registration. It touches on the point which the Minister has already spoken to with regard to strategic and operational plans and the direct college calendar and the open weeks which were done by the colleges. And today also NSWAT has paid 10% to all the colleges in order to obviate the problem of colleges charging registration fees given to NSWAT recipients. Just in terms of the resourcing of the system, slide 4 indicates that there has been a growth, 6% growth in the indicative budget of colleges, which stands for 2015 at 6.1 billion. And that briefly, that budget allocation is with goods and services of different regional offices. You rotate that out, and then what is left is subjected to program funding. Program funding is made up of compensation of employees, the college operational costs, and the CAPEX for maintenance. Those are the three. And because college staff, which are paid within the 63% bracket, are going to shift to the DAET, with the back from the 1st of April. Therefore, it means 63% of the budget allocation has got to remain with the DHET, and what is left is transferred to colleges. 63% being meant for compensation of employees, and therefore that which is. With regard to bursaries on slide, to slide 6. It's 2.2 indicative allocation that will be confirmed to colleges when we confirm the actual subsidies based linked to actual enrollment, because the principle is the money must go where students are. Therefore, both program funding as well as NSWAT, the idea is not to fund institutions for the sake of funding institutions, but we fund where students are. Within the bursary allocations, the main priority is college fees, because the program cost is split into 80% with the subsidy by the state to each student, and the 20% must be either paid by the household if you can afford, but if you can't afford and you qualify for the NSWAT bursary or any other financial aid at the college, and then 20% pay us for that. NSWAT pays on the submission of claims basis. Now, the registration process, basically, in during the course of 2015, went in a manner that said when the students come in, they go to go through career counseling, go through placement tests to determine the level of academic support they might require in the college, and also to be put in appropriate programs depending on their capabilities and interests. And this, the process was supported by mostly our regional office officials. By the day before yesterday, I think the number of campuses had increased from the 146 to 201 courses, and as well as an ongoing process as long as the registration continues. And so there should be a revision there. The enrollments on page 10 are a reflection of the preliminary data as we received on the 19th. The final enrollment data for the first trimester, the first semester, and in terms of the annualized program is going to be submitted to us on the 20th. But it is important to say before me, the NCB program is a once off registration. In other words, once we get the data and on the 20th, it will be the data for the whole year. But your engineering N1 to N3, that is a trimesterized program, which means there is going to be registration for the first term, and there's going to be registration in May, and there's going to be registration around August. That applies also to N4 to 6 engineer. Those are trimesterized programs. And the business studies program is a semester program, semester-based program. In other words, we will have one semester data on the 20th, but we will also have to collect data for the second semester around July, August. So that this is the data that we're going to present as preliminary data after the 20th. It will be indicating largely the first enrollments of the year. Now, also when we look at the trend, when we look at the NCV program, that 101,000, you can split it into two. 34% of that figure is in engineering, and 64% is in largely business studies. When you compare with the trend last year, at this time last year, we were sending at 258,000, and this year we are at 272,000, which indicates an upward growth at the time of year of about 6%. As the minister indicated earlier in his opening remarks, we are seeing a trend that of the preference of the NATO program to the NC. In our enrollment, what we're also picking up is that particularly because seemingly most of them, they take up an N46 are matriculants. So there's fewer numbers which goes to an introduction into N4. They just go into N4 straight. And there is significant enrollments in the business studies, as indicated in the slide earlier. When it comes to achievements, over here, the enrollment and registration learning process has improved better prepared, and better prepared colleges have been able to execute registrations according to plan. A majority of TVET colleges were able to pre-enroll in preparation for this year, and as a result, those colleges did not have long queues, but one or two, a few colleges who did not do this, that is where you experience the challenges with regard to long queues. And in some instances where you had good IT systems to capture registration process, the processes went well. But there were few colleges where the IT system let the college down, and therefore it led to a long process of manual manual capturing of data. On slide 13, we are indicating some challenges, and also we are also indicating solutions we can put in place going forward in future in order to improve the process. And on slide 14, we indicate the trend in terms of the growth in numbers, including the unaudited data for 2014. That in fact the sector seems to be expanding, and it is an expansion within the context of the needs for education, training and skills is welcome. And I think I would like to
limited that chamber. It's only to indicate that there is a discussion which was raised with regard to textbooks. And one of the constraints was in the funding formula are textbooks. And therefore, each college is responsible for procurement of its own textbooks. The department does not procure textbooks for colleges. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ma.
Sure.
Thank you very much. We are done. We took only 25 minutes. There are still 5 minutes. So we'll donate that to. That's fine. We give the money as well as our time.
Thank you for your generosity. But then we will now ask Mr. Dapper to take us through the NESPAS presentation. And this presentation must be concluded.
Honourable Chair, thank you.
Oh.
I am Nathan Johnston, a member of the NESPAS board, accompanying the NESPAS team this morning. We have an apology from Professor Temba Musia, who is the acting chair of the board. He unfortunately had a university engagement, but he had to be at today. The NESPAS team is led by Ms. Uwa Dutta, who is the executive officer, and he is accompanied by the other three members of the executive team, as well as the senior manager for communications at NESPAS. The executive officer will lead the presentation. They asked me to do the introduction of the presentation. The NESPAS mandate covers three core areas. The first one is the provision of loans and bursaries to students, and that includes the raising of funds. The second area is the recovery of loans, which the Minister has mentioned as one of NESPAS's challenges in his overview. And the third broad area is around the research function, maintaining and analyzing the database, conducting research in order to enable us to advise the Minister on matters relating to student financial aid. Presentation today focuses on the first area of our mandate, which is the allocation of funds for loans and bursaries to students. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members and everyone in the house. I will not start on the slide on the view and strategy, which is slide 4. I'll just go next to slide 5. Just briefly on the review of 2014, NESPAS for 2014 has already paid 8.7 billion. After we've done all the financials, we expect that number to come very close to 9 billion, which was our estimate at the beginning of the year. We're also in this year, 2014, implementing the new model for the first time. And the success of that model, we can see it now in the numbers. We have dispersed 1.1 billion out of the money to the new student standard model. NESPAS is still by and large operating two systems. One is the old model on slide 6, and on slide 7 is the new model. The areas that are in red show the responsibilities of the universities. All the areas that I read in the old model are still done by the universities, which is it's the universities that award loans to students. They are the ones that take applications, they approve loans, and they would communicate to students whether they are rejected or not. They will pay the allowances to students. And that's what did in the old model. It's the last two of which is NESPAS will receive a claim from a university and pay the claim. Which that means if the university does not submit the claim, NESPAS cannot pay the claim. And that's the role that NESPAS plays in the old model. But things are changing in the new student-centered model on slide 7, which started operating in 2014 as a pilot. NESPAS plays a much bigger role. NESPAS takes applications in the new student-centered model, funds students, and the university's role is to confirm that students are registered, so that NESPAS only funds registered students. The students sign their loan agreements online, and the minister has already mentioned that we promise to pay allowances to students within 48 hours of them signing that loan agreement form. That's the new student model. And that model is operating at Durban University of Technology, the Nelson Mandela University, the University of South Africa, Canada University, the University of Mpumalanga, and Goldblatt University. We're also testing the model on the five children colleges
listed at slide 8. Just to ensure that 2015 we're ready, on slide 9, we had to communicate with the universities much more earlier. We gave them the allocations in December for 2015, which means that at the beginning of this academic year, each and every university knew how much money they will get from NSFAS. By the 1st of January, all universities were aware how much money they're getting from NSFAS, so they can start the process of allocating to students. Slide 10, we just show the breakdown of money, both confirmed monies and provisions or estimates. The big chunk of the money that is dispersed to students comes from the DHT for universities, about 4.1 billion, TVET colleges, 2.2 billion, and then there is also a significant amount of money that comes from basic education for each bursaries and as various other departments. I think it's worth to note that also from the CIDRA, we're expecting to receive about 500 million rand this year. We have, and I should say, when I ran away from Mani University of Technology, I was going to sign an agreement with us and Western CIDRA that afternoon. That's why I was not able to witness the drama of that afternoon. We have signed some of the CIDRA. From slide 11, Jefferson, we just detailed the allocations we invest. I'm not going to go through those allocations. But I think it's worth it to note that when we go to slide 14, those allocations total 5 billion rand. Those allocations are mainly 4.1 billion rand that comes from the Department of Education and Training for universities. There's also about 560 million rand that are of the 800 that we expect from National Skills Fund that is also already allocated to the universities. An amount of 450 million rand that come from recoveries also gets allocated to universities. It's there in the numbers. And it comes from network recovery that gets covered by network and gets plowed in to assist the current quarter of students. And it comes from experience of the system as part of the recovery. There is efforts and that's what to ensure that we sustain the number and increase the recoveries. On slide 15, we demonstrate the amount of money that we've already paid to universities at the beginning of this year. Because the government financial year starts in April, we then don't have the money for the new year. But what we then do is to pay the universities what we call an upfront payment before they even submit the claims. All those universities listed there, that's the money that is sitting there in their account. So that if they are new students that will qualify for full funding for NSFAS, they don't demand upfront registration fees from them. And every university that ever applied this year, we have paid them an amount of money. We have already paid 296 million rand to the universities at this point. And most of them were already paid by end of January. And that's the amount that NSFAS invests to ensure that students are not excluded just because they come from families that cannot afford the upfront registration fees that are demanded by some universities. The names of the universities are there. I think it's worth to know that there's one University of Technology there, there's Forte, there's Watasasuru, there's First Patterson University and various other universities. On the TVET also, from like 60%, we just list the allocations or provisional allocations as the commercial website. They are still finalizing the numbers. The final allocation will be completed by this department. But after we receive the provisional allocation of the network on slide 21, we pay each and every college an upfront payment of 10% of their provisional allocation. Again, so that when students walk into a civil college, they are able to be registered if they will qualify for full funding from NSFAS. They are able to be registered without the college requiring that they pay an upfront amount. We have paid today 242 million rand to various colleges. And the names of the colleges, in fact, in the college space, it's not even the names of the colleges. All colleges get paid an amount. We have paid all of the city colleges a total amount of 242 million. And just to add on this one, we're paying colleges an additional 20% of the allocation in the first week of April. And the reason is the first week of April is because we'll be getting money from the department in the first week of April. And then we'll be able to top up the allocation to all the colleges so that they also see to 20% collectively of their total allocation. We've also communicated much more with the ADT. We attended the meetings that ADT arranged with HIPAA, student leaders. We've also issued circulars to ensure that there's a much more efficient administration of the system this year. Administration process for TVET colleges, the process for universities, and that gives universities and TVET colleges deadlines
as to when is the last date for them to submit claims for this year. And that's very important so that everyone knows that these are the rules in the system and this is what they need to do to comply. Also, the final program, we provided additional guidance this year because we're seeing that some investors do not fully understand the role of the final program. BTEC, a contentious issue, also provided clarity on the circumstances in which BTEC could be funded. And there's now a circular that has gone to the universities to clarify the issue. Administration of CETA funding, this is a relatively new funding. Universities were still struggling with CETA funding, we're going to clarify this. This year also we've issued a new circular learning material guideline. The learning materials guideline is basically to give universities an opportunity for the first time, those universities that are already ahead, moving from hard copy books to electronic books. So that allows us not only use for hard copy books, there is room for it to be used for electronic learning materials. That's why we've now broadened the definition of a book allowance to be a learning materials allowance. Various stakeholder engagement has taken place. We've also spoken to various players in the system to ensure that there is synergy and there is understanding. On slide 24, we've also decided to deploy teams during this time of the year so that they can be able to offer support to the universities and be able to explain the network process much more quickly to university staff, but also to students when the needs arise. We also continuously engaging the sources of funding. We should thank the department for setting us up with the CETAs. We had the relationship started towards the end of 2013 to 2014 with most of the CETAs. We're now going for the second round of contracting with the CETAs. As I've mentioned, we've already signed a contract for health and welfare CETA, services CETA, FACET. And once we've signed the contract with all the CETAs, we expect to get about $700 million of funding from all the CETAs. Voluntary Entrepreneurship CETA is almost the grandfather of the system. They were the first CETA to come on board in 2012, and that's one of the CETA that has continuously assisted students through the national system. We're also one of the programs that we encountered when we did the new student-centered model for the first time last year was that the Fundabushaga Bursary program, they used to give the list of students in and around early April. And we now need this basic education to say because students need to get their books in January and they need to get food allowance in January. They need to give that list much earlier. The departments of lunch now have the list of students much earlier, especially for the universities that are in the modules, because that's where it is much more critical that the list of students is available much, much earlier. Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Your presentation. I would like to give you 5 minutes stretch break so that when we come back we are re-energized for a vigorous engagement. Let's take a 5 minutes tea break. Well, thank you once more for the presentation. I will now open for discussion by the honourable members. I see honourable member Suela, honourable member Carmen, honourable member Killian, and honourable Professor Pozoli, and honourable member Bata, and honourable member in that order.
Thank you for the opportunity and good morning everyone. We have just received a presentation from the department as well as NSFAP. And of course it is good that NSFAP was able to spare money to students. But during some of our oversight visits, we learned from the students that they received sometimes this money as late as December or end of November, which obviously is a cause of concern, and the students in term as what they are going to do the money they received it at that particular time, while they should have received it earlier. Perhaps what I would want to know is why is monies to reach the intended recipients. In this case, I'm talking about those that happen to qualify and, of course, are being funded by Ernst Funds. Is it an issue of capacity or lack of management or what is the cause of this delay? And perhaps Ernst Funds could also indicate whether there are consequences for people who fail to do their work as required, but also to check whether or not are there no timeline agreement with the department for the disbursement of this fund. If it's the case of the department delaying, you may actually say so, or perhaps it's a failure on your part to adhere to those particular timelines. Now, the second issue that perhaps I would like to ask is that when we visited the University of Mpumalanga, we encountered the fact that the students received funding from different sources, others are receiving money from the European Union, others from the Department of Mpumalanga, in the form of Zalshaka, and the others from NSFA. But the problem there was that the students that received their funding from the Department of Mpumalanga and the European Union get stipends, right? NSFA students get nothing over and above their tuition fees, which causes some bond of contention. I just want to know what is it that can be done at least to bring equity for all the students in the same campus to receive the same attention. And finally, I just want to, well, I take note that the department or the air presentation by the department and the minister indicated that the department was able to visit about 201 campuses throughout the country, which is quite commendable for the purposes of monitoring. Perhaps I would like to know what lessons have they learned from these visits. And most importantly, we know that there are tests that are conducted by TVET colleges for placement. What happens to students who unfortunately are found not that may possibly not cope with learning in those institutions? What happens to them? Are they thrown out, or is there any form of assistance that is given to such students? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first welcome both the presentation from the department and NSF. And good morning, everyone. My question is that during the time when we're doing the oversight, it was reported that there were results which were still pending, and the student could not progress to the next level or to register to the next level because of that problem. I just want to ask whether the department is having a plan in place to carry this program, because it is not only for 2015. It was happening on the previous years also. Maybe if there is a mechanism that can catch this problem once and for all, so that the students register in time and progress to the next level. And the second question that I'm having is that we realize that the government has significantly increased the funds available for student loans and balance through the National Financial Aid Scheme, NFS. And since 2011, poor students in the TVET colleges have not yet were paid for this tuition fees and have been assisted in the accommodation and transport issues. And also the ANC is also committed to the progressive realization of free education at all levels. In order for this to happen, we understand that more work has to be done. And how can we ensure this commitment that we make sure that it is realized? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
question. First of all, I would like to thank the department and NS Plus for presentations to us. Secondly, I would like to also say that I think it's necessary to say that we commend the steps that have been taken to see to it that we try to eliminate some of the systemic problems that we usually face at the beginning of the year. Clearly, it doesn't always mean that all problems are sort of resolved, but at least it is good to know that everybody is committed to trying to find solutions within budgetary sort of constraints that we have, because in the end, if we receive more money for the sector and for this department, then clearly it will be the job will be much easier. Not that money always solves all problems, but clearly I think we need to end. The person I would like to first of all just ask on the departmental presentation on the TVET sector. We are aware of the whole issue of indebtedness and the frustration of students. And we have, in the previous sort of interaction with the minister, inquired, some of our members inquired about what is causing the indebtedness. I was wondering if the whole notion that the 20% should come from the household, and we know very well that those households are poor, very poor, is that not contributing to the fact? And how does the department foresee a possibility to resolve that critical issue? Students come from backgrounds where they don't necessarily have the wherewithal to do additional work, to go to restaurants, etc., especially in specific areas. You know, if I think about universities that are not situated in metropolitan areas, where it's easier for students to work in addition to studying, is that not an impractical approach that we are taking? Secondly, I would like to know if we are taking, and I'm now referring to slide 5, the implications of the 63% that will be retained in the TVET sector before monies will be made available to the institutions. What are the implications of that? How is it going to affect the channeling of funds to where the students are? I mean, we are saying that now the compensation of employees must be retained, whereas this is the process that started in 2009, etc., etc. Has the department factored that into the rollout of the budget going forward? If we could have clarity about that. Then, if we look, especially it affects universities, and I don't know, maybe it affects the TVET sector as well, the enrollment of semester programs, and you must have a credit before you go on to the next one. How are the allocations and bursary allocations specifically made to students? Do they receive only partial funding, and thereafter they must achieve their first credit before the rest is paid out? Or are they becoming indebted immediately if they bop out, then they are indebted? Just clarity about that, because that would affect them if they drop out 1 year, and it often happens, that the student wants to go back next year, but because last year's debt, there's a problem. So please, if you could just explain practically how that is managed. Then we have referred to textbook procurement, which is the responsibility of institutions, colleges and also universities. How far has the department progressed with an electronic library system to access books, etc.? The minister referred to payment of VAT on books should be reconsidered, etc. I mean, we really need to become a nation sort of in perpetual mode of learning and improving our qualifications, etc. So, concern about us
making provision for manual libraries, etc. Is there no electronic system that can be introduced to service the entire sector? And how far is that down in the pipeline? Then,
May we then move on to Professor Zoli?
First of all, the very impressive, I might say, uptake for cash does need to enter. You know, when the when new services open up, sometimes you get a complete flood of interest in them with thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of calls till the system crashes. Now, we don't seem to be seeing that with cash. It seems to me it's coming slowly. But I do wish, I do wonder about the rollout and the expense of the scheme and whether, if it's all just students who have already been rejected from phoning, whether this is really going to be worth the amount that we are spending on it. So I really would like to urge the department to evaluate the scheme early rather than later before we spend too much money on it. Then the second question, how many colleges did experience disruption? I think that was glossed over a little bit in your presentation. We don't really know. You mentioned East Midlands and you mentioned another one. We need to have some more definite statement. And also, we happen to know about one college that isn't open yet or isn't teaching yet. So just some idea of the areas in which the college sector is not working yet. Thirdly, this growth of business studies versus engineering studies in the college sector. We have mentioned this before. It does seem to be a worry because the whole point of boosting the college sector was to boost skills, and those skills seem to be in the science and engineering field. Although this is not to denigrate the skills in the business studies field, given that we are becoming a finance-driven economy as well. It is something that is a concern to the committee, and I think we need to have some clear guidance from the department as to how they're addressing that. Lastly, it's quite concerning, you know, when even NISFAS presents something to us, it's very much an optimistic, isn't everything marvelous, and look at all the things we're doing kind of presentation. But when I look at the section by the department on NISFAS, in their presentation, which is pages 10 to 14, there are serious challenges set out there in their slides from pages 10 to 14, many of which we do know about, and of course we know that NISFAS knows about them. But it's concerning to me that NISFAS itself doesn't put those challenges in its own presentation. Maybe it has to present a smooth image to the department of how they're coping with their challenges. But I would like to urge you not to try and gloss over these things when you present to the committee. We need to know worst. We don't want to see those things disguised. And you often put forward, speaking to Ms. Bass, the student-centered model as a solution to many of these challenges. But as it happens, it's not providing a solution. It's nowhere near being rolled out to all universities. There are dozens of universities that are not using the student center system, and all of those problems of top slicing and continuing students not being supported and all of those things are exactly what are causing riots at the moment. So it seems to me, Ms. Fass, you really need to put your dirty linen out a bit more in the public, which is to us when you present to us, because we cannot gloss over these problems. And I would like to ask Ms. Fass to have a look at those slides briefly and maybe give us a quick response on the challenges mentioned by the department in the Ms. Fass arena. Thank you.
Honourable Member Mbasa.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be directed to the NSFAS team. I wish the picture here could be the only picture, even in reality, when we relate with the universities and the civil colleges. One of the things that the institutions complain about consistently is the inability to clear the system for various reasons on time, and thus causing delays in the payment of allocations almost in every intervening quarter. My question is, do you have a plan to strengthen the relationship between yourselves and the diverse colleges and some other universities of technology to enable the universities to understand where you come from, how you work, and for them also to internalize the kind of problems that they normally have, so as to enable them independently formulate systems to support students and support the financial aid scheme, so as to always have things taken up and going way physical than they currently are now. And lastly, the official that you have fairly spread across all the provinces, they seem to be a resource. But I don't think they are spending enough time in particular with the chambers colleges. Because if you don't spend enough time with your clients, you will obviously interact with your clients at most difficult times. And I think that's one of the reasons why you look very remotely away in your handling of some of the problems. My take is, you need to make sure that the FPTs in particular are assisted to clear the system, to know and understand the system, and to be able to transmit that sort of knowledge to the beneficiaries of the system, so that when the SRGs have these problems, they are the first point of call to at least predict the answers that will come from management. But also they are able to explain to students what is the problem. Right now, they find themselves having to lead some of those crisis situations with lack of information and even lack of guidance as to how things will happen in the future.
Thank you very much for the question. I will now allow... Ms. Mpunu.
Thank you, Chair. May I first thank all the presentations. My question, the first one, will go to NSFAS. NSFAS has piloted the new student-centered model, which I believe has better screening processes because it utilizes information from SAS, your SASA, and Home Affairs. I think it makes better in terms of the verification of the authenticity of the application. My question is, why is NSFAS not adding more institutions in this new student-centered model? Because I believe it is more efficient and it will assist in ensuring that monies are distributed to the correct or the people who, students who are eligible. Secondly, it is with regards to the unclaimed funds. It is a challenge that most colleges are not able to claim all allocated funds given the guidelines, even when there is a need. I believe that the guidelines really need to be reviewed, but I would like to know, what does NSFAS do with the unclaimed funds? Is there a possibility by NSFAS and the department to perhaps reallocate those funds to where there is a need? The third question to the department. Does the department have rules and guidelines to regulate college expansions? Because where in most places, in most TVs where that was visited, you will hear them speaking of expansion. But given the financial constraints, you wonder whether that is the right thing to do. Are there guidelines and rules that regulate college expansion. Thank you.
Thank you once more for the question. I will now advise the department to respond.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, just some few questions. And my colleague, Futi, can in as well. On the different nature of bursary funding as institutions from different sources, NSFAS is regulated in terms of the Act insofar as to what are the conditions attached to the awarding of the bursary of NSFAS. And the allocation there for students is quite attached to those conditions. So if one bursary funder is putting some other conditions, including pocket man or what have you, it's that funder, but NSFAS doesn't do that. It only seeks to fund the basis and the tools of trade that enable a student to go through the system. So we can't, with any given age, make a comparison or seek to compensate for what other bursary funders are paying for in respect of students who happen to study in a particular university or elsewhere in the country. So NSFAS is funded strictly on the basis of conditions attached to it. The second question from Honorable Member on results. Here, what is happening? Students write supplementary exams, especially on NCC. And now the challenge that we are having is the consolidation of these results with the other results that have been obtained by a student through the normal course of the year, through the IT system. That is why we made a presentation as a department to cabinet to allow us to deviate from data provision of IT support for examinations, because there are quite a number of flaws there, and that has been correct. So the test has been advertised, being evaluated now by technical officials in the department as well as CETA, which is State Information Technology Agency, looking at addressing this particular matter. So that's where the process is at the present moment. I think on quite a number of questions that the Honorable Member Gideon has raised, Dr. Matlobo will deal with those questions, including the basis on which some of the practices are obtaining, which is the attendance policy, amongst other things. I think he will be talking on that. The colleges, as Honorable Member pursued, that are experiencing some problems are the ones that we know through, first, our monitoring of the registration process throughout the country, as well as interacting with the respective colleges and stakeholders. And to date, where there have been problems that are being managed, is Waterberg, Buffalo City, Liberlande, and East Cape Midlands. So there is no other report that has been brought to our attention, nor anything that we have picked up as yet, insofar as our monitoring is concerned throughout the country. So if there are any, we may perhaps be updated during the course of the time. But as of now, it's only those institutions with those nations, those colleges with those nations of strategy. Business life, engineering. I think this is a big question, actually. We started to analyze this in the department. think Mrs. Herta Martner undertook a study and analysis of registration pattern, the subject, throughout the country, province by province, in relation to the demand of skills as well as the supply. Out of which in our engagement, there are quite a number of interventions that were made to address this. But the problem basically is in the offering of math and science at basic schooling level. The number of students with math and science, because engineering studies require math and science in the main. So we developed foundation phase provisioning programs at our universities for first time entering students to minimize the risk of failing so that they are given support, especially in math and science. And I think it would date, if I'm correct, it's about 17,522 students that are enrolled in that program at university level. In respect to colleges, the minister commissioned the investigation of offering of math and science foundation programs at TVET colleges so that students wouldn't do well in math and science at grade 12 are able to be assisted through this program so that they are enabled to take studies in scarce skills areas. Several colleges, as we think, are offering academic support programs in math and science as well as language with a view of ensuring that we're improving the overall performance of students in this particular area. So it's not a matter really that would resolve immediately, but there are interventions in place from the standpoint of the department in addressing this matter. Above that, the minister met with the Dean of Faculty of Education from all our universities, and the main issue was to actually work out strategies and mechanisms to uplift the teaching of math and science in our schooling system. So they are working on that. Maybe I could elaborate later on those specific areas of intervention. But it's the question of math and science that we are attending to. Yeah, my colleagues will address quite a number of the questions I would get into, including e-library.
Thanks, DG. Madam Chair and honorable members, let me just deal with the first issue of the in our monitoring of legislation. What lessons have we learned? Most institutions, let me put it this way, there are instances where it's not the whole institution that is experiencing a problem. It may be an individual can pass as part of the institution. And now, therefore, capacity of campus leadership is very critical, and that is the capacity which we must build. The distances between campuses and central offices, in some instances, may be in excess between the R and Atkinson, is more than 250 k's. And so that you can't find the principal there, but the leadership at campus level is where we must focus. And secondly, the colleges which have done well are colleges that have planned collectively as a team, both central office as well as campus, and therefore the levels of preparedness of the college as an institution. But in instances where there has been difference institutional cultures within one institution, you can easily pick up, and this is the area in which we must close, is the area with which we must deal with. Secondly, we have learned that without proper TVET IEP systems, colleges that have good IT systems have been able to sail smoothly with the process of registration. But where IT systems are not in a good state, and that is where, and in some instances the IT system, and in other instances is the capacity to deal with the IT system, and that we are paying attention to that. Now, a project which requires, again, a great deal of investment is to ensure connectivity between the main office and the campuses. Where this is in place, you will find it's mostly urban colleges. And most rural colleges, IT connectivity is a challenge. And as a result, the pace at which such colleges manage registration is a challenge, and that is a focal area to the attention where we must also pay attention. Then with regard to students who are tested at entry point, when the rationale for the testing was to deal with the issue of where are the cognitive gaps. You are coming into a college program. Where are the cognitive gaps? Particularly in what is called fundamental subject, which is mathematics and English. So that when you create this profile, and then it has to be used by the lecturers who will be teaching the students to first deal with the gaps which come from the schooling system. And therefore there is no student based on the results, and therefore they are turned away. The rationale for testing also is to determine the capacity of handling the program you are choosing. And then you get advice that it would be in your best interest to be placed in the program rather than the one you are going for. Now, the issue regarding the 20%, 80% split, we have realized the inadequacies of the current funding framework for TVET colleges. One such witness, for instance, its inability to provide for capital infrastructure funding. And to this effect, the minister has set up a team to review the funding framework for the research system, including adult education, the coming community colleges, in relation to, is this funding framework still appropriate for the post-school education and training system, because it's a funding framework which predates the current systemic arrangement. Now, we may be advised, the minister may be advised by the task team how best to deal with the inherent weaknesses in the system. Now, the 63%, we have no, in fact, from the view of the department, the 63% which is going to be held for the compensation of employees is not going to be a problem, because that amount has never gone to colleges in the first place. The provinces have been playing an agency role. In other words, the conditional grant has been transferred directly to provinces to keep.
while on the other hand, the department was transferring directly to colleges the remainder for their own operational cost and textbook and other stuff. So it's not new. It's only that now it is going to move to the Department of Higher Education and Training. Dealing with the semesterized or trimesterized courses with regard to NSFAS, simply put, the allocation for NSFAS is based on the calculation of the full-time equivalent. In other words, for a trimester course, the allocation for the college is for the three trimesters, so that you will apply when you come in at the beginning, but if you succeed and you have attended college for 80%, more than 80% of the time, you do not need to reapply. But if your financial need is not matched by your exerting yourself to succeed, it's a pity that you don't owe the state, but you no longer qualify. And it's a time that your financial need is matched by your academic excellence. The last question relating to the TVET system is the expansion of the colleges is regulated in terms of the Continuing Education and Training Act. It is the responsibility of the minister to declare or establish an institution. And when the minister establishes an institution, he establishes an institution with its components. In other words, the name of the institution is gazetted together with the campuses. If for some reason you want to vary this, the minister must approve. Want to increase the number of campuses, the minister must approve. The absurdity which the department is inheriting is situations where when a college is expanding, they didn't go to the MEC to ask the MEC approval, it just expanded. And when the college realized that they no longer expansion, they closed the institution without the MEC approving, and that has serious community and political consequences. And that is why the department argues for you to add a campus, it must be approved by the minister, because we will evaluate your capacity to sustain the campus, both in terms of student enrollments as well as the funding capabilities available at the college and in the discuss. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. There are actually very few questions for me to respond to. I think DG responded to a number of them. The one question specifically is in relation to the electronic library. Just to indicate that we have a national project on the go at the moment that between the Department of Higher Education and Training and Department of Science and Technology, where we are working with IFAS to do an investigation to see precisely how we are going to be able to deal with the issue of the electronic library. On the first phase of this, we're looking at the issue of electronic journals and databases and looking at how we might make those equitably available to all our higher education institutions and science and technology institutions. The second phase would be looking at how we start thinking about basic texts. And we're talking about core baskets of basic texts that would be equitably available to all our institutions, no matter where they are. And that would then expand to also include the TVET system. Key challenges within this, firstly, are around, particularly with electronic journals, the issue of how we do that on a national level, and we set up negotiating teams, high-level negotiating teams, because the idea is that if we can do this as a national project, we should be able to get economies of scale, and we should be able to get discounts from the publishers. So that's the one issue, and then the other issue, of course, is how do we fund this across the system? We're looking at that both from the perspective of the Department of Higher Education and Training and Science and Technology and other institutions that might come into this, and it's part of the work of the funding review framework that we will be looking at. But the idea is that we should be focusing on getting in place such a national digital library to support the system. Another aspect of this, of course, is the whole issue of the ITC capability, the actual infrastructure, the IT infrastructure at all institutions. And there is a project that's ongoing at the moment to investigate exactly what the IT needs are of the system to ensure that we do that. In terms of the catch and the uptake of catch and whether or not this is a worthwhile enterprise, I think we've got to understand that the catch is the first phase of the central application service, which we think the evidence shows is absolutely necessary in this country. I think in terms of the current rollout catch and the numbers that we have seen, they've increased significantly since the first year, and we didn't go all out on a massive campaign, a media campaign around this. We worked with the institutions particularly, and we're looking at referrals from institutions. We think it's an absolutely critical service to provide on two aspects. One, to assist with limiting numbers of walk-ins that happened this time ago. We've seen that in the past where students don't have a way of getting alternatives when they're rejected in the institution. And then they go on these walkabouts on through the system. They go to different institutions and they queue up at that institution. And we see with the implementation of CATCH that has been more limited. You know, there are examples of students, and I think medical applications are one example that really shows why this is so important and why the investment is worthwhile. We had, in some data that we collected last year, an indication that there were around about 5,000 to 7,000 applicants across the system for our 8 medical schools. And that was for a number of places of around about 1,800 new places. So there you're talking, and those are all eligible students, there you're talking about a large number of students who've got really, really good matric results. Time for very few spaces. When they get rejected, particularly poor students will only apply at one institution because of the cost of application. Now they get rejected at that institution, and where do they go? So what the CATCH is doing is it's getting that information of those students that are being referred by the universities as well. They're not only being referred by individuals. And then we're able to identify those students who've got really excellent results and then work with other universities to try and find places for them. And if we look at the kind of average amounts at the moment, if we are finding and assisting, say, 6,000 to 10,000 students to find space in either universities or in other PSET opportunities, we do believe that's worth investment. I think most of the other questions were specifically NSFAS-related questions. I think maybe we could ask Ms. Fess to respond to them.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will deal with the NSFAS question. I think the fundamental question I think came from Honorable Zoli about us not amplifying the challenges enough. I think in slide 4 we put the challenges. And we thought that this presentation would be read together with that of the department, but the department has already put in the challenges side. And we wanted to also give the portfolio committee a balance sheet that is. In as much as there are all those challenges, if we're saying the challenges recovers, but again there's 450 million rand from recovery that is also in students. We have challenges with fundraising. But again, in the public sector side, you know, we're getting traction with working with the CPAS. We need to now go to the private sector. So we wanted to give the portfolio committee a balanced view that it's not only that there are all the challenges, but there's nothing that is being done with addressing some of the challenges. On the communication front, again, there were challenges in terms of communication, but we also presented in our slides that these are some of the engagements that we're doing. We have challenges with working with TVET colleges. Again, we have met with the principals twice this year already, just to try and speak to the principals and make sure that they are able to govern the financial aid processes of the various Cuban colleges. Because that's an area where, as NESFAS, we think that we are still weak together with the colleges, and we are working together with the principals in that area. Therefore, the intention was not to try and present a close picture. The presentations should be read together, that there were challenges, but also there was an illustration of what is being done to deal with some of the challenges that we face in the system. And one of the key challenges that we also highlighted was the fact that we are unable to assist all the children that require assistance. But the DG has also said, for instance, in the case of TVT, that we'll be assisting about 20,000 students. We've got an issue at TVT where 2,000 plus students will not be assisted. But also, the balance in terms of what we want to present is there are 20,000 students that are being assisted at TVT. And it goes to various universities. In fact, in some of the historically disadvantaged universities, about 80% of the student population is dependent on NESFAS funding. To answer some of the specific questions that I raised, I think there was an issue about late payments. The issue of late payments is something that we're dealing with the colleges. Because part of the reason is colleges don't submit claims on time. And there are choices that NESFAS says. One of the choices is to act on deadline and say you have missed the deadline. But once you act on deadline, you disadvantage the students on the other side of the class. We almost going to kind of balance the administrative inefficiency and fairness to the student. That's why we now have gone to the principals of the colleges to work with the principals to alert them of the implication of when they are not submitting claims on time. But if they at the end of the deadline or the extended deadline, there's still money that is not used, we then reallocate the money within the system. There's no money that goes back out of the system anyway. If there is a university or a college that does not use the money, it gets reallocated either sometimes to within the university. For instance, in the case of VET, now they had about 7 million rand that was not utilized somewhere else, and they needed money somewhere else. And then we allowed them to move the 7 million rand from that area to another area so that they can assist in ameliorating their challenges. The question of UMT students and Mpumalanga students that are not funded equally, some got their presence. It happens that some places are much better than others. Punzabushaka, for instance, gives much more money than one to buy what generally we do at NESFAS. But again, it's a choice. If you can give some students pocket money and stipends, it means that we'll fund fewer students. And that's the choice that exists in the system because they take you only so much. If you then give more to one student, it means you sacrifice another student down the line. We try and give what we think is adequate for a student to go through the academic program and succeed. And that is what we have said as a cap, for instance, this year we have got a cap of 67,200 for university students. But for TV colleges, there is various caps for various allowances. The TV colleges students only receive their salaries. There are no loans with TVET College. There are no loans with TVET College students. Therefore, there is no indebtedness to TVET College students. If they drop out, which they don't. But it's also for them to receive their allowances, one of the conditions for them to continue to receive their transport allowance is they must attend classes. There is a requirement that they must continue to attend classes so that we know that they have got an opportunity to succeed at the end of the year. Our plan in working together with universities and colleges, we're spending much more time now with universities and colleges. And admittedly, we could not go to all of them. We could not be in all the TV colleges, and especially the campus. I think the commercial was illustrated an example of just in one college, so there's a distance of 200 or more kilometers from one campus to another campus. We try to be in what we call the risk area in terms of the potential of crisis erupting. And also the lessons, some of the lessons that we have learned is as part of the administration of the special process, in fact what we're now having with the TVET colleges is we're having a workshop in March, to bring all the TVET college and special administrators back again to reorient them as to what they need to do by when. Well, some of the lessons that we've seen is some of them are really not up to their knowledge of how the system should work is not up to standard. In the new student center model, One of the reasons that it's still very small, and one of the reasons that we're touting it as a solution to problems that we're having is we've seen what it could do on a small scale. We now have to work and ensure that we expand it. But again, it's a federal system, we have to expand it responsibly. We can't just expand it over 1 year. We have taken the first year, which is 2014. We decided consciously in 2015 that we need to consolidate our gains from 2014 and not add any new institutions in 2015. We're now consolidating that and make sure that, you know, the technology, the human interaction, and the stakeholder interventions are all working, so that when we start rolling again in 2016, we are aware of the challenges and we'll resolve all the challenges. I think that's all the questions that were directed to answer, Mr. President.
Jesse, we've got a time constraint. Now, honorable members, if I allow you as long as you to be 1 minute or 5 minutes, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute, and also you need to participate for us to the question. Just go straight.
From any fund. The slide number 10 refers to other funders and attached million. We have in fact insisted with the committee that is a potential for any fund. You indicated earlier you're going to move in that direction, but we were hoping that something would have happened by now. Is that not lower than estimated last year? Please, if I can please just inform us about that.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I would like to start by appreciating the fact that NSFAS is saying they have already paid the 10% upfront for the students in the TVET and universities. I just want to inquire whether there are still colleges that are still requiring the upfront monies from, more especially from the students that are beneficiaries of NSF.
Most people complain about NSFAS.
That is what is the problem here. NSFAS is the problem. CEO, please look at your work so that you can be able to say this is what you are not doing right. Because what is happening is affecting bad on our government, whilst it is this organization, this wing, that is not working properly. Thank you.
Might that result in those numbers changing
But currently at this point, you know, those are funders that we, you know, we're almost sure that they will put money on the table in terms of the other small funders that NSFAS work with. The colleges that still require, we have received a report that there are some colleges that at the beginning of the year required money from students, and we have encouraged those colleges to desist from that, especially those of the students that were fully funded by NSFAS. It should be noted that, you know, some students will have to pay upfront fees in colleges where they will not be better students. Not all the students are better students. I think the point raised by another member about the NSFAS role, I think we have taken as homework in terms of introspection on the part of ourselves as members to ensure that what we do really impacts the lives of students. I think personally, I'm very close to the system as someone who also benefited from the system. I want to let it down. On the transfers from the CITAS, we've gone through the first year of the cycle of our relationship with the CITAS. I think the first year was a bit of a rough relationship. I think it's now going to playing ground. As I reported in my presentation, we are now signing second round of agreement with the CITAS, with FASET, Services CITA, Health and Welfare CITA. We almost are on the verge of a football CITA arrangement. We're arranging for an extension with wholesale and retail CITA. Then we've now gone through the playing of a new relationship that we're having with the CITA. The things are simply back on track. The chairperson has already spoken on fundraising strategies. Just on the NetBank arrangement, NetBank was giving us about 10 million rands a year. They've written to us saying they want to administer their digital funding through their own foundation internally. They've donated money to NSFAS that they've already given to us, and we've taken that money to fund some students in the banking sector. That's the status of the arrangement with NetBank.
On the agreement, because we want you to work professional on this thing. It was the first cycle. As you enter into this relationship, I want you to formalize this relationship. So then, for instance, if you've got a written agreement, then these people will be bound by that agreement to behave in a particular way towards you. But also on the NetBank, you have not elaborated why is NetBank pulling out? Because we thought it was the best arrangement, and then it should go out. You know, when they pull out, to me, students tell them there's something. What is it? Why do they pull out?
The reason they provided is they've set up their own capacity to manage the battery themselves. For us, we don't see it as a pullout because students are still going to be funded. Those students that are funded by NetBank will remain funded, they will remain having battery. Just on the second one with the MOUs, I think with the second round of MOUs, the person is much tighter. We've got a much better understanding with the CITAS. The first round of MOUs, there were flaws in the MOUs that we had in the CITAS. The second round is much tighter. We're now on a much more sound footing than before our relationship with the CITAS.
Just a government and also ensuring that students get money through NSFAS. I'm sure I'll give you another chance to explain to us why they pull out. I could not know why they grow. No, I am worried about future partnerships. So we're going to look at how you manage this one so that we can then, you know, be reassured of where you go to partnership. You will be able to maintain those partnerships for us.
Now, I just wanted to support you because we have all along said the first phase for NSFAS will be to establish itself as a credible institution to disperse funds. And in such a process, they will soon gain ground and public-private partnerships will come about. Other institutions would not want to manage their own capacity to disperse funds. It would be much more comfortable for them if they could align themselves with the NDP, with Care Skills, etc., and make funds available.
And in fact, some of the members would be very keen to assist NESA with approaching some of the institutions. But if NetBank have pulled out, you are arguing that it's not a loss. We do argue that it is a serious loss of credibility if NESA is perhaps not trusted with management of those funds.
Where other matters were considering, they will pause now to say, what's happening? So I'm trying to say, indeed, we want to represent as well so that we can succeed in getting many partners to assist us. We have a problem, say, of insufficient funds. So there are reports where people pulling out, coming in and pulling out, sends out a very negative information. All right. Are you now ready to respond on why did you collapse?
I can only say what NetBank said to us. I'm not going to be able to provide any other reason than what NetBank provided to us. And the reason they provided to us is they built their own capacity and they're going to manage their 10 million rand in-house.
Another follow-up.
Honorable Chair, the NetBank relationship was not one in which NetBank gave NSFAS 10 million rand a year and said, you go use this money to fund, to identify and fund students. The NetBank, this relationship is one where NetBank selects the students, they approve the funding, they send NSFAS a list of approved students. They make the cash available, and NSFAS's role then is to administer that money by providing, by disbursing the money to universities. And that's the nature of the relationship. What I know about most foundations, and particularly foundations that have been giving money for educational purposes and educational projects, is that over the last couple of years, they've actually been pulling a lot of that money in-house. They've been designing their own projects, and they've been appointing service providers. I think one of the things that the board is going to require is that there's an evaluation of the NSFAS NetBank relationship, and that there's a follow-up, possibly from the board side with NetBank, to establish what their reasons were for, one, deciding to build capacity, and two, to then terminate the NSFAS relationship. So the board will follow up on that, and we will provide a report to the department and the portfolio committee.
Well, I think as we close, I'm going to allow Ola, you're supposed to respond to the issues that we raised, but Ola, I need DG, Honorable Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair. No, thanks for the opportunity. I think we were making tremendous strides despite the present in charge. We commit that indeed we will try and build capacity so that we do away with all the deficiencies in the system. This is too huge a task, especially in the wake of very constrained fiscus, but we shall not despair, Chair. We are putting our head, and indeed these engagements really, they strengthen us to do better. Thanks for the opportunity. We will avail information which you acquire the committee, especially on the NetBank NSFAS relationship as Johnson has already committed, and whatever information that you had required. But thank you very much again for this opportunity. It is always good to engage the portfolio committee as part of our outing to committee to Parliament.
regardless of the challenges confronting us, we've made progress. But then, this is a new year. We need to make further progress. I think if we can improve in these areas of enrollment, if we can manage enrollment of students better, I think that will take us, to new heights. If we can have the department closely monitoring or intensify their monitoring on infrastructure development at the universities, because that's another serious problem where students cannot be accommodated. So if you say in particular, this one can be, it can be constraining of expansion of infrastructure on the existing university so that they can take even more students next year, we will appreciate. And then improvement of NEPA's funding. But I know we're asking for the better. May we have the fundraising strategy of NEPA? We will appreciate, because we really would like to monitor using this as a measurement instrument for progress in as far as fundraising is concerned. But also earlier on, you would remember that we said there must be close monitoring of control of university fees, because we see there are also another something block now. More the fees grow, the more students cannot access education. Now, it's not in line with the spirit of the white paper on post school education and training. One paper. It's a policy. We would like the department to speedily look at the cost drivers, because we want to believe that the cost drivers are the ones that determine the price. And if they can look at that and then be able to control the university fees, I think that will take us to another level. And value for money, that's what this one came up from. In terms of your quality teaching, quality education, and quality outcome. Quality throughput must then increase. Because the more people remain in the system, the more they block the system, so that new entrants cannot access. So it can be, I think the government, if you can strengthen your monitoring on this one, we also appreciate as a committee. And then timeliness payment, timeliness transfer by your CETA, timeliness payment by the department to NESFAS, and timeliness payment by NESFAS to institutions, and a follow-up. I'm talking about a follow-up by NESFAS on those universities that do not submit their case. Because you're there, you must monitor. You must worry if you see a university not submitting their case on time, and follow up on the case. Some teachers say they did not submit their case. You cannot deny it. Remember, we're all here in partnership finding solutions for this initiative. So you must follow up on those institutions that are not submitting their case. And then if the department can also assist with regards to debt management, because it is becoming a problem. So all these gaps need to be closed and be trusted in ways of closing these gaps, so that we can have a smooth running of the education system, and then we achieved on the educated nation that will compete with the other nations of the world and succeed. Thank you very much. We're not taking this relationship lightly. We appreciate and thanks for your cooperation. Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister. Now the meeting between ourselves is adjourned. I know that there's hot. We were told. I think this one is hot. Please help yourself. Thank you. Otherwise, if you go, it will waste the extension. To the honourable member, I think the meeting is never adjourned. We will look at the meeting later, because we're not only a member, we don't have members of the opposition, so it will not be good.
Thank you. Thank you.